Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 36 of Nerd Pride Radio. 36, a square number, a triangular number, a highly composite number, and a semi-perfect number. 36 is the atomic number of Krypton, 36 AD is the last possible date of Jesus' death, and 36 is the number of gallons in a standard British beer barrel. Whew, thank you, Wikipedia. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I'm a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. My co-host this week, I have the galaxy's most famous R2 series astromech droid, R2-D2! And he's rolling the dice already. You know what that means? It's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, or in this case, at the beginning, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. That's right. This week, it's all Pod-O-Matic all the time. That's what we're doing this time. So, right away, the first number R2 has given us is number 52. This is from a Mr. Sirius Paul. And Sirius Paul says, could you survive if you were trapped in Latin America? Off the top of my head, no. Specifically, alright, because there's two ways to view this. If I were just to be dropped into Latin America and now have to survive and find my way out, oh, possibly so. I would find, you know, someone to help me who speaks English. I would find an American consulate. I would figure out what I need to do. I'd get myself out of the country. But trapped in Latin America, that implies that I can't leave. I would have to find some way to survive on my own, by my wits, in Latin America. My guess? No, maybe. I don't know. I don't speak any Spanish, and I don't have any talents that are applicable outside of, fixing computers and playing role-playing games. So it would make it tough. But, I don't know. You know what? Let's say no. Let's say no. I would do miserably at that. Number 77. Also from Sirius Paul. And Paul this time says, I just bought Old Man's War based on Jeff Hawes' recommendation. Have you ever listened to anything Jeff says? Well, actually, yes, quite often. Jeff and I know each other going way back, about as long as I've known you, Paul. And Jeff actually has interesting stuff to say on quite a regular basis. I listen to everything that he says within earshot. Well, or for that matter, anything he posts on my website because, you know, I read everything on there. But, I can't believe you would fail to give Jeff credit like that. I don't know what's wrong with you. Okay, so he can be a bit of a downer sometime, but that's part of his charm. Dude, you lay off of Jeff. Seriously. Number 90. Again from Serious Paul. I can see how this show is going already. Well, we've got a whole hour to kill. I'm sure other people will show up at some point. Paul asks, why haven't you watched The Chappelle Show? I don't know what's giving you the impression that I haven't watched The Chappelle Show, because I have. I love The Chappelle Show. I loved all 2.5 seasons of The Chappelle Show. I thought it was a spectacular, spectacular bit of TV. Laugh my ass off. I thought it was great. I am sorry that Chappelle had his odd breakdown, and I'm sorry that he has disappeared from the national scene since then. Actually, a couple months ago, Yancey and I got to wondering, whatever happened to Chappelle? Did he ever do anything? And now, you know what? A couple of interviews, and mostly he's doing stand-up comedy. He's keeping it local. I mean, he's still working, he's still making money, but just not doing anything big, which is a shame. I think the man is a comedy genius. I think he's got a ton of talent, and I would love to see him come back and start doing stuff again. I really miss him. I do. Number 32, from Brasky. Brasky says, talk about Car Wars. You know what? Have I never talked about Car Wars on the show before? I love Car Wars. Car Wars was my first introduction to tactical wargaming. All right? And it sounds odd to call, you know, to talk about something like Car Wars. I mean, Car Wars is essentially a game where you play out, you know, the Road Warrior. I think that was their original conception, was you play out some kind of world where there's, you know, this post-apocalyptic sort of feel, and all the cars are heavily armored and carrying massive guns, and you chase each other down the highways and you blow the crap out of each other. And usually, you know, you don't play it with a huge number of pieces on the field, although you can, and I have. Usually, you know, you play it with just, you know, maybe one car each, maybe a couple of cars each. And yet, it is a tactical war game. It is minutely detailed, down to, you know, your car, you know, everything goes in phases. And so, you know, as the turns come around, okay, I get to move on this phase. Okay, I can move forward half a block. I can move, you know, or I can turn my car that angle. I can do, it's very minute, very detailed. And we have had a blast playing Car Wars. I have not played Car Wars in probably 20 years. It's been since college. I remember playing some in college and we had a great time doing it. I have not played since then. I should, you know what? I guess it's because I don't own Car Wars anymore. I should find a copy, break it out, and play with my kids, because Car Wars is just a lot of fun. And you know, then my next step in tactical wargaming was Starfleet Battles, which Starfleet Battles is an amazing game if you like designing ships. As much as I love spaceship design and I love arraying my fleet on the board, every game of Starfleet Battles we played turned into, after two turns, we're ready to quit. Because we'd have our fleets out there, even if you had just a couple of ships. Well, suddenly I'm firing photon torpedoes, I'm launching drones and shuttles, and all sorts of other stuff out there. And pretty soon, the board is filled. Even if you just start out with two or three ships, now suddenly you've got 100 things on the board, all to keep track of. And it just drives you crazy. So, for me, I'm not that into tactical war games. That's, I think, why I like Car Wars as my prime example of a tactical war game. Because it's small. Keeps it on a nice personal level. Number 89. Serious Paul's back. Paul says, do they still make choose-your-own-adventure books? You bet they do, buddy. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we all know choose-your-own-adventure books. We all read them, played them when we were kids. Love choose-your-own-adventure books. And as it turns out, they still make them. Some new company bought them out. They started producing them again in Barnes & Noble, not, you know, 2 years ago, probably it was. We actually picked up one or two for one of my kids. And I don't know if it's the nostalgia factor. I don't know if they've changed their methodology. I don't know if, you know, they've softened them or made them less violent. I have no idea. I don't know the details of why. I just know that it wasn't as good. I mean, I've gone back and read the classic Choose Your Own Adventures. I've reread the ones that I read as a kid. And I enjoy those. I still enjoy those. But again, it may be the nostalgia factor. But I do know that at least as of 2010-ish, they were still making new ones, so I assume they still are. I could probably Google that right now, but you know what? That's good enough. 22. Serious Paul. Okay, we get it, Paul. You love the show. You ever been cow tipping? No. No. When I was in high school and more than that when I was in college, we talked about going cow tipping. I mean, I live in Nebraska. I've grown up in Nebraska. There's cows everywhere, and cow tipping is legendary. And everyone knows someone who's been cow tipping, but no one's ever actually been cow tipping. So, which I know there'll be lots of you who now will say, no, I've been there. I've done it. Whatever. Okay. I've never done cow tipping. I understand the concept, and I understand why people would think it was funny. I certainly, when I was in college, thought that would be hysterical. But then we never actually went out and did it because it would require probably trespassing, leaping fences, possibly angering cattle that would then trample us, you know, that kind of thing. I have read conflicting reports that say because of cow physiology and how they sleep and blah, 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 that cow tipping is actually impossible, that contrary to myth, they actually sleep laying down, or at least most of them do. And so, therefore, cow tipping is just a myth. That is countered by people go, nuh-uh, I've done it, dude. All right. So, I don't even know if it's a real thing, but I've certainly never tried it myself. Number 65. This one's from a Mr. Dire Cat. Dire Cat says, do you have any allergies? No, not that I'm aware of. At least that's what I always put on the medical forms when they ask. Say, none known. Never had a problem with it. But I do have a son, though, who has a nickel allergy of all things. Can you believe that? All right, we just thought he had this severe eczema. I mean, forever, because it was just all over. Turns out, no, it's a nickel allergy. So the snaps on his baby clothes, the buttons on jeans, the rivets on jeans, any metal that you find on clothing is probably nickel or nickel-coated, and therefore it irritates his skin and he breaks out. And then when he goes to scratch it, he then gets the little bits of nickel under his nails, and so he scratches and then he touches, scratches somewhere else, and now his whole body is broken out. It's horrible. So what that means is that every new pair of blue jeans we buy, he's nine now, but every new pair of blue jeans we buy, we get those little iron-on denim patches, and you have to iron on over the inside snap, and if they've got rivets that are exposed to the skin, you got to iron on over all those, and now he's fine. But what an odd thing. I didn't even know nickel allergies existed, but there it is. Number 9. From Zimnipot. Zim has sent me, in addition to the ransom stash that he sent me last week, like 30 of them or so. I counted them out. It's closer to 30. I thought it was a lot bigger. Or 50. Now I can't remember. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. He also sent me another 10 or so before that in a separate email, so I now have a slew of new ones from Zim. So hopefully we'll see a lot of him here. And Zimny asks, why is abbreviated such a long word? It just is. Don't you wish there was a short version of that? Number 79. We're back to Serious Paul. Paul says, a fighter, a mage, a thief, and a cleric are in a car. What kind of car is it? And who's driving? The car is probably a Toyota Camry, because sadly it's the cleric's car. He was the only one who had the extra cash for it. And the thief is driving, because the cleric is too nice to say no to him, and the thief, he's got the highest dex modifier. He would obviously be the best choice, especially if we needed a fast getaway. Yeah, I think that would do it. I mean, you know, I wish they were in a cooler car, but they're not. I mean, at least, you know, they've got, you know, seating for four, nice big trunk they can put all their gear in. I mean, they're good, right? Number 45. Serious Paul? Paul says, doesn't Rob D's club to death rock? I have no idea. I don't know who or what any of that is. I assume it's a band or performer and an album. I have no idea. Number 93. Again from Serious Paul. Serious Paul says, stat Bruce Willis. Interesting that you didn't have me stat John McClane, because that would be cool too. But we're just going to stat Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis as an actor, I'm going to put his high stat in charisma. I'm going to give him, probably a 14, 15. I mean, he's good at what he does. Maybe even a little higher. Maybe 16. Maybe he's got a plus 3 there. But then, where else does it go? Wisdom, average, 11, 12, I don't know. Strength, dude, for being as old as he is, keeps in really good shape as a performer. So strength and constitution both, I'm going to give him 12 to 13 on those. He keeps himself in shape. Intelligence, he seems to get by. He picks good scripts. He's done very well, made good business decisions. Oh, that would have applied to his wisdom too. But his intelligence, I don't know, 12. And then dexterity, I have no clue. We'll just call it average, 10, 11, whatever. So there you go. He's pretty much average across the board, maybe slightly above average, but with the high charisma, because he is a really good actor. Number 76. This one's from a Mr. Zimney Pot. And Zimney says, who is the most powerful NPC you've ever introduced in a game? That is an interesting question. I had in mind the one from my current game. Well, I guess it's not current. We haven't played in a long time because, well, one of the guys went off to college and we just had scheduling difficulties. But the game I play with my older sons and their friends has been the big villain is he's in the game. He's been there, but they just don't know that he's there. Very powerful ogre, sorcerer, possibly undead, extremely powerful. But again, behind the scenes, mostly. They don't even realize that this is the guy. So hard to say that I've introduced him, but he is there and he is active. But that was going to be my instinctive reaction. But now that I think about it, you know, I've introduced... there are so many games when I was a kid that, you know, I had... When my brother Kyle and I played one-on-one back in high school, before that even, he was a halfling thief. And who was the halfling god of thieves? Brandabaris? Was that his name? I had the god Brandabaris come down. He gave himself an avatar, a mortal form that he used. And so he was essentially, you know, a 20th level thief. He could have been much more powerful, but chose not to for those particular adventures. And that one, not nearly as ludicrous as it sounds, but that was his partner for, you know, a few gaming sessions. And it was interesting. What else? In the, one of the Shadowrun modules, the Harlequin series. There you go. I ran the Harlequin series of adventures for a group of Shadowrunners. And, that involves Harlequin himself and whoever his elven counterpart was. They were both elves. But, I mean, they were immortal and massively powerful. And sadly, when you get to the end of Harlequin, I mean, it's really... the players just get to sit and watch while these guys do cool stuff. And had I been a better GM at the time, never would have run that one. That was just it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. The missions were good, but Harlequin required some railroading that I didn't know how to handle railroading at the time. I mean, that their scene comes up and... When it happens, the players are all supposed to do this. All right, they're under fire, they're trapped, and they're supposed to hop in a van with a stranger who offers them a way to escape. And my players said, well, no, I ain't getting in a van with them. This is a trap. Which, it turns out, it was right. it was a trap. But if they didn't hop in the van, there was nothing in the book to accommodate how that happened. There was no way to get to the next part of the adventure, and therefore no way to ever finish the other half of this whole book, and I didn't know what to do. It hadn't, at that point, I was so used to players doing things that I expected them to do, that when the book expected them to do this, I just, you know, went right along with it and thought, oh yeah, of course they will. And then when they didn't, I wasn't prepared. And I wound up railroading them, and they wound up getting in the van anyway, with great protest from one of them. And then it wound up being a trap, and they were justifiably pissed off at me. So, but yeah, the Harlequin players were probably highest level NPCs. I mean, them and, you know, the god. But, you know, and there's been others, I mean, but not, no one that's ever had, you know, some serious screen time, I suppose. Number 39 from Zimny again. Zim says, you can only have one kind of sandwich. Every sandwich ingredient known to humankind is at your immediate disposal. Describe to us what the sandwich is like. I think I'm going to disappoint you on this because I am a picky eater, and therefore I don't put a lot on my sandwiches. I keep them simple. For example, today, roast beef sandwich with some cheese on it. It was awesome. Awesome. I didn't know mayo, no anything, just a bun, roast beef, some cheese. That was spectacular. That was my lunch. Probably be my lunch tomorrow, too. But my favorite sandwich? It would probably be a grilled cheese. It would, yeah, there's some ones that come in behind that, but grilled cheese has been my favorite since I was little. And, oh, speaking of when I was little, one of my favorite sandwiches, and I can't believe I'm going to even describe this thing to you. When I was little, I couldn't have been but 3 or 4, but I knew how to make peanut butter and jelly, and I loved peanut butter and jelly. And so this one time, I'm at home. I don't even remember where my parents were, but I was in the kitchen, unsupervised, and decided that I was going to make myself a sandwich, but I wanted something different. I was ready to experiment. So I made peanut butter and jelly because that's what I know how to make, but instead of just peanut butter and jelly, I had a third slice of bread in the middle that had a little bit of butter on both sides of it. So I've got peanut butter, butter, jelly. And that sandwich was freaking fantastic. Oh, as a 4-year-old, I had never tasted anything so good. That was awesome. And so, still to this day, I will occasionally make myself a peanut butter, jelly, and butter sandwich because I love those things. And in fact, I've even introduced, only one of my sons has actually gone for it, but I've introduced my sons to it, and my second one just loves them. So it's an acquired taste, maybe, I don't know, but I love those sandwiches, really, really good. But if I could only have one, it would be a grilled cheese. It would be probably plain old white bread, buttered up, some nice American cheese processed slices in the middle, and then grill it up till everything's all melty and just a little bit brown. Perfect. Number 11. This one is from Stan. Stan says, imagine that you could zap yourself into any movie and go on an instant road trip with one of the characters. Which movie and character would you choose? I'm speaking really slowly so that I can think about this one. This is one of those thinky questions that always stumps me. All right, but not having time to think about it, I'm gonna go with Friends with Benefits, and I'm gonna take my road trip with Mila Kunis, whatever her character's name was, because she was smoking in that movie. Wow. Or better yet, no. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and then take a road trip with Mila Kunis. She was even cooler in that movie. Oh, she was awesome fun. Ooh, but if I go with Friends with Benefits, I might get a chance to meet Justin Timberlake. Ooh, toss up. Either way, it's going to be Mila Kunis. Let's go Friends with Benefits. You know how I love my Justin. Number 34. Brasky says, quick, off the top of your head, and without thinking about it, on a scale of 5 to 16, how hot is Neil Patrick Harris? Oh, I just talked about Justin. You're going to make me do Neil Patrick Harris. Oh, wait, without thinking. 11. Five to six. Yeah, 11. Because he's physically, he's a decent looking guy, I guess. Physically, I'm not really attracted to Neil Patrick Harris, but his personality, the man is incredibly charming and charismatic and a ton of fun. He's smart. He's clever. I just like Neil Patrick Harris. I think he's awesome. And so, that personality adds a lot to your hot factor. It really does. Neil Patrick Harris, 11. Number 53, Sirius Paul asks, how come in D&D you can only have two magic rings, but the Mandarin from Iron Man has 10? Well, because the Mandarin is not in D&D. Duh. All right, and also, as discussed on the previous podcast, I think the two-ring limit from D&D is absolutely asinine. That is absolutely stupid. The idea that you could, it's just dumb. All right, it's an obviously artificial construct that makes no sense in game world logic at all. The fact that you need to go get yourself a magical necklace made from a zombie hand just so you have the extra appendages to put another ring on, and then you can have three. And then that's your limit. That's just stupid. Okay? Look, it's a magic ring. Just because I have a ring of protection on my pinky finger does not mean that my ring of water breathing isn't going to work when I slide it onto my index finger. The magic from one blocks the magic of the other? Is that how it works? How does the magic coursing through your body decide which ring has precedence? The one that went on first? All right, and now it's blocking all the magic channels going up your arm? It's stupid, and we all know it is. All right? As far as I'm concerned, when I'm playing D&D or Pathfinder or whatever, my players can put on as many damn magic rings as they feel like. My solution to keeping them from overpowering is don't give them so many magic rings. Number 14. Direcat's back. Direcat says, what extracurricular activities would you suggest to high schoolers that enjoy this podcast? Anything and everything, honest to God, just get involved in something. I don't want to be all preachy parenty about it, but just do something. Doesn't matter what it is. Now, having said that, my own kids, as I've mentioned before, they're in drama. They do the one-act play in competition. They do the all-school play. They compete at speech, and my oldest son has gone to state 3 years running. That's because I'm very proud of him. He is awesome. They do robotics. There's lots of nerd activities. Depends on your school. Depends on the area. I mean, if you're up for speech, debate kind of stuff, go for it. If you like, there's plenty of nerds that my kids, for example, they do band and choir. They're in marching band. In fact, all month long, we're going to marching band competitions here, which, by the way, I love going to marching band competitions. I can't tell you how much I enjoy. I enjoy going to any of their competitions. Maybe it's just because my kids are performing, I guess. But I've got extra vacation this year, and so marching band competitions are always on Saturdays. Those are easy. But I've got some extra vacation that I have to burn before the end of the year, so I requested off all the days for their one-act competitions. So when they take their one-act play out and they go to, there's a local one-act festival at a school, and it's always like on a Thursday or something stupid. I'm going to go to that. I'm going to get to watch plays all day. I love doing that stuff. I'm going to go to their district competition. If they make it to state again, I'm going to their state competition. I love watching all that stuff. God, there's a ton of stuff. Just do anything. But I'll tell you what, my absolute favorites is the drama and the speech. Maybe it's because my kids are involved. I can see that I would have enjoyed those things had I chosen to do them in high school, and I so wish now that I had. Number 23 from Sirius Paul again. Sirius Paul says, what size shoes do you wear? I'm U.S. size 12. Number 33. I can't believe we haven't gotten any repeats yet, R2. Thank you. 33 is from... ooh, from Akiva. I haven't heard from Akiva in a while. If you could eliminate any popular saying or expression from the English language, what would it be? Oh, this one is so easy. YOLO. YOLO. Oh, I hate that phrase. I don't even know why I hate it so much. I just do. And I know it's brand new, but for some reason, something about YOLO just drives me batty. Did I already say YOLO, you only live once? Fortunately for me, there is one of the comics I read. He's got a t-shirt. Which comic is it? Darn it. Questionable content. He's got a t-shirt that, and the ad for it spins at the bottom of his page forever, where he has YOLO and it says, "You obviously like owls." And there's owls across the page. And, that's really cute. And so I actually had, I shared this with one of my sons and, a tie-in, and he had some girl at school who asked him and said, "What the hell does YOLO mean? I keep hearing it. Everyone keeps saying YOLO. What is that?" And he turns to her and complete deadpan goes, "YOLO, you obviously like owls?" And the girl just goes, "Oh," and clearly she didn't want to seem stupid, so she didn't question any further, like, because he said it like it's supposed to make sense. And so she walked off, and he was so proud of himself. He was very happy to have thrown that little bit of misinformation out into the world. Number 67, from Sirius Paul. The Fonz versus Bruce Lee. Who wins? Bruce Lee. The Fonz wins because people are afraid to fight him. I mean, that's really his whole gimmick. And Bruce Lee wins because he pounds the crap out of people. He would make mincemeat of the Fonz. Fonz is certainly cool, but he has not got the fighting prowess that his reputation has made out. I'm sorry. And besides, he's also played by Henry Winkler. When I was a kid, how was Henry Winkler the epitome of cool when I was a kid? Because we all thought the Fonz was cool. TV told us the Fonz was cool. That was his whole shtick. And yet, he's Henry Winkler. You could not get a bigger nerd. Honest. I don't get it. Bruce Lee would certainly win. 36. It's from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, "Where have all the cowboys gone?" I got nothing. 62. Daz. Hey, welcome to the show this week, Daz. Daz says, "I love training hard to keep my fitness at peak levels. How about you?" No. No, not at all. In fact, as most of you probably know, I struggle with weight. I currently weigh 245 pounds. So here's the deal. I did weigh 270 pounds. And then I lost like 40. My wife and I started dieting and working out and watching what we're doing. Lifestyle change, as it were. And we both did well. I lost 40 pounds. She lost 50. And then something happened and we kind of slipped back a little bit. She gained like 10 of it back, but not bad. She still looks awesome. But I gained like 15 of mine back, and I've just been kind of struggling. And now I'm getting back on it, and I've lost a little bit, so I'm getting back to where I ought to be. And hopefully, further than that. 245 is still too high. I need to be about, if I could hit 220, I'd be thrilled to death. But 200 is the ultimate goal. But here's the thing. I'm looking in the mirror lately, and I'm telling myself how fat I am because I just feel disgusting. Part of it is I need a haircut. I just look like a slob because my hair really needs to be cut. But then I got to remind myself, though, that, I've gained a little bit recently, but I used to be 25 pounds heavier than this. And a few years ago, I used to be 45 pounds heavier than this. I used to weigh 290. In fact, 293, 292 was my absolute top weight. I mean, holy crap, I was fat then. So, I got to keep it in perspective. Yes, relatively speaking, I was skinnier 3 months ago, and now I'm heavier, and I feel bad about that. But in the grand scheme, I'm actually doing pretty well. So I just got to remind myself of that. There's always ups and downs. There's always backsliding. I got to stop being so negative about it, really, because I'm doing good. And my oldest, Gygax, his best friend, McDiddles, just recently, like over the summer, lost a ton of weight, got himself in shape. He's looking really good. And now Gygax, as you know, a nerd who is not in terribly great shape, you know, he's not a fat dude or anything like that. But, you know, you can certainly see he's got the same body type I do, and he could go the exact same way that me and my dad and my brother all went as we got older. I think he was inspired by his friend's weight loss, and therefore he's trying to keep himself in shape. I mean, he's just, you know, kind of watching what he eats. He's not being, you know, overly fanatical about it, but watching what he eats a little bit. He's been working out, you know, putting in a half hour every night, just, you know, walking, running, basic weights. It's just real simple stuff. And so I'm very happy, very proud of him that he's taken this step. I mean, he's going to be going off to college next year. And, you know, he's done with that teenage growth spurt. He's done with that whole, you know, you can eat whatever you want, whenever you want, and you'll never gain weight because you're a teenager. Well, he's still a teenager, but he's hit the top end. I mean, whereas, God, a tie-in at 14? Oh, God, you always forget what that's like, being 14, 15 years old. And he will sit down and eat, you know, a double portion of whatever we're having. And then a half hour later, he's ready to rummage through the fridge. And he's like, hey, is anyone going to touch these leftovers? I mean, fortunately, he keeps the leftovers clean. It's very nice. But, yeah, you know, anyone going to eat this casserole? I can have it. All right, good. I mean, he'll clean us out. And yet, skinny as a rail, fit, looks awesome. Yeah, lucky dog. Yeah, yeah. See how long that lasts, buddy. Number 57. Hey, it's Stan again. Stan says, do you have a favorite brand of dice? No, I just love dice. I love any dice. Most of my dice, like as in, I would guess the plurality of my dice, I wouldn't say majority necessarily, but the plurality of my dice, the largest segment is probably Chessex, just because Chessex has the booths at Gen Con, so twice I've gone in there and taken the mug full of dice. Once they had a special running, and so I ordered a pound of dice. I just like getting dice, and I don't really care what they are or where they come from. I have all sorts of bizarre specialty ones and just interesting little quirky ones, and it doesn't matter where they come from. There's lots of dice I love, and sometimes I'll buy, you know, I'll see a set if I happen to be in a game shop, which does not happen very often. If I happen to be in a game shop and I see a cool set of dice, I don't care where it comes from. It's got a cool pattern on it. I like the way those numbers stand out. Yeah, all right, I'll take that one. And that's my new favorite set of dice for the next, you know, 8 months. Yeah, it all works for me. I don't care. I love dice. Number 22. Oh, finally a repeat. Okay, hold on. Number 7. This one's from Serious Paul. If you could make Kevin Smith direct any movie adapted from a comic book, which one would it be? Deadpool. I would love to see a Deadpool movie done right, done clever. I know there's a Deadpool movie in the works, and my oldest is incredibly thrilled about it, but you got to remember, it's a Marvel property, and Deadpool was completely ruined at the end of the Wolverine origin story. So hopefully if they do a Deadpool movie, it's going to wind up being completely different. They've got to completely divorce it from the X-Men mythology, and they've got to come up with a clever Deadpool. I mean, Deadpool's funny and witty, and it's just a smart, smart comic, and you've got to have, I mean, that same kind of humor's got to be there. He's going to break the fourth wall. That's what he does. That's one of his superpowers. I would love to see it done right. And I think Kevin Smith, who has a knack for clever banter, witty conversation, making high-minded concepts funny and accessible and yet exciting, well, sometimes, I think Kevin Smith could do that. If I had to have Kevin Smith directing my comic book movie, I would make him do Deadpool. And I would have him help write it and have him throw away all the crap that's come before and just start with Deadpool based on the crap that people love about Deadpool in the comics. Go. Number 73 from Stan. Stan says, can someone really be a geek if they like Apple products? Or does that doom them to be a hipster? Well, yes and no. It depends. I would say that hipsters have a higher propensity for using Apple products, but it doesn't necessarily rule out your geekitude. All right, it's all a matter of percentages, man. And hipsters, I never had a big thing about hipsters. Never really paid much attention to them. But I follow a website. My dad turned me onto this. Forgive me. It's a website called Hot Chicks with Douchebags, and you can find that at hotchickswithdouchebags.com. And it's funny. It's a mostly PG rated site. I mean, it's hot chicks with douchebags, and the language is sometimes a little strong, but for the most part, it's not terribly inappropriate. But every day he features one or more photos, usually culled from the internet, culled from Facebook, photos that people submit of really hot women hanging out inexplicably with complete and total douchebags. And one of the categories, it's very detailed, and if you get into the mythology of this site, it is, well, suffice to say, they are intricate, bizarre, very silly, and amazingly detailed, as with any form of Pokemon collecting, I suppose. But the point is, the one category is Herpster, which is essentially a douchebag hipster. I used to think the hipsters were mostly just kind of harmless and silly, but oh my God, no, they're just as big a douchebags as anybody else. Those little 1920s pugilist little curly mustache going off to the side. I hate those things. The hats, the whole style. Hipster is not something you want to be. I don't think that Apple products automatically put you in that category, but yeah, it's getting pretty close now, isn't it? Yeah, sorry, Joel. Number 21 from Serious Paul. And Paul wants to know, why does Dr. Jones hate snakes? Because every hero has to have some kind of bizarre, stupid weakness, I guess. I mean, and it's an easy one because on a visceral level, lots of people hate snakes. Lots of people are terribly creeped out by snakes. Even, you know, intellectually, I know that there's nothing wrong with the snakes. In my area of the country, there are no poisonous snakes within, 100 or so miles of where I live. I'm not worried about poisonous snakes. If I see a snake in my yard, it's going to be a garter snake. It always is. And yet, it still freaks you out to see the thing there, doesn't it? Having it crawl over your foot is the worst. But it still evokes such a primitive reaction from people. It's an easy thing to make him scared of without having to explain it. Hey, he hates snakes. That's just the way the world works. Number 18. Ooh, this one is also from Serious Paul. And, before I go on, you might have noticed a sudden change in quality a question or so ago. In mid-sentence, I was interrupted. Things changed. I am now in a different room, different venue. So if the audio is off, that's what's going on. Anyway, Paul wants to know, why are pyrotechnics so cheap in Indiana? I have no idea. Tax laws? They're selling to all the border states? I don't know. I've only passed through Indiana. I've never stayed there for any length of time. I've certainly never noticed their fireworks cheap signs. So I don't know, Paul. Number 66. This one is from Dire Cat. Dire Cat asks, what is the weirdest D&D experience you've ever had? Probably my first one. I mean, I've had lots of weird experiences, some more so than others. But the first one was, I'm 10 years old, and some kid I barely know is sitting me and my brother down to play a game of D&D with him, and he doesn't actually explain the rules. He's got character sheets in front of him. He doesn't let us see them. He has the books in front of him. We have no idea what they are. All he does is point to pictures in the book and go, okay, see, that's what you look like. Yeah, okay, here's what you look like. All right, here's the adventure. Let's go. And he starts telling a story, and we just sit there because I had no idea what was supposed to happen. And then after about 5-10 minutes, we finally pick up on it after the goblins have already knocked us out and dragged our bodies away. But yes, that was incredibly bizarre because I was introduced to the concept of formal role-playing by simply starting a game. No rules, no explanation, no nothing. Just, hey, you're a dwarf. Go. Okay. And that was probably the weirdest. Other than that, You know, oh gosh, we've had so many. Probably not just weird, but groundbreaking as well. The first time we had real intra-party conflict. And this was all Jeff Hawes's fault, so blame him. We had never played with Jeff before. It was me, my brother, my cousin, and Jeff, and we were playing an online game over IRC chat, I think. And we had just never experienced intra-party conflict to any serious degree. I mean, there was always arguments and, you know, how are we going to cut up the treasure? And, you know, we'll sit here debating forever on which way we're going to go, but never had it come to blows. It was just assumed that that sort of thing didn't happen. But Jeff had a different style of role play. His character was full of soliloquies, lots of revelations of his internal monologue. He was a deeper role player than we had ever been at that time. So, you know, kudos to Jeff for bringing it to us. And it got to a point where it was a matter of, hey, what are we going to do with these captives? They had attacked us, yes, but they weren't evil. They clearly weren't evil. They were obviously just defending their homes, but, well, we can hardly let them live, right? Because they're going to give us away. And so we had my brother advocating for killing them before we leave, and Jeff, the mostly good cleric, arguing that you can't just kill innocent people because they happen to be in the wrong spot. And quite literally, it got to them getting their weapons out, getting ready to take swings at each other. I really thought a fight was going to go down. And as a GM, I panicked. I hadn't dealt with it before, and I didn't know what happened. I mean, I knew the fight would play out. Obviously, we were going to do it if we were going to do it. But, you know, what happens if one of them kills the other? What happens if one of them sustains real damage here? And, you know, how does the party move on after that? And ultimately, one of them backed down. I think my brother. I don't remember. The details are really irrelevant. The whole point was they were going to fight. And that was all new to me. And this was, you know, God, how long ago was that, Jeff? Like 15 years? I mean, it's been a while. But it was an awesome, awesome scene. And at the time, very weird to me because we had not done that before, not to that level. So it was really cool. Number 46 from Zimnipod again. This is one of Zimny's old ones. I've seen this one as I've glanced through the list before. Zimny says, define art. Art is creative effort expressed in such a way that other people can absorb or consume it. That's really all I got. I can't, it can be good art, it can be bad art. I can't see anything beyond, hey, this is my creative expression. Other people get to see it or take it in or have the capability of it. Yeah, maybe my art is something I don't share with other people, but I could if I wanted to. That, to me, that's it. Creative expression that could be shared. Number 27. Oh, Zimny again. Zim says, you discover a beautiful island upon which you may build your own society. You make the rules. What is the first rule you put into place? Rule number one, I get the big bedroom, the one with the nice view of the ocean and the great little walk down path to the beach. That's mine. No one else can have it. Rule number two, probably involves some way of making sure that all of the women have sex with only me and that I get pampered and spoiled. But once I've got the big bedroom, obviously I'm master of the isle, and power is its own aphrodisiac. So I don't even really think I need any other rules beyond that. It's good to be the king. Am I right? Number 71, Stan. Hey, Stan. Why does Iowa deserve to be first in the primaries? You know, that is a darn good question, Stan. Because you would think anyone could just set up their primaries whenever they damn well please, right? All right. But they can't. Apparently, there's big old fights about this, that people want to move their primaries up, and then there's jockeying for position that, well, no, but you can't be before Iowa. It's Iowa, and then it's New Hampshire, and then it's, okay, this hodgepodge of everybody else. I don't know. I honestly don't get it. And it's not even like Iowa is some big bellwether state. It's not like the Iowa primaries or the Iowa caucuses or the Iowa. It's not like any of this has all that much importance. Am I right? I don't get it. I have no idea. It's yet another one of these Byzantine rules that makes no sense to me. As far as I'm concerned, every primary in the country should be held on the same day. And I understand that screws up their campaigning because they like to be able to campaign at each section as the primaries come up, which is why the states like to stagger them so that they can get their own individual attention. Iowa likes to be in the spotlight. The whole business. But I don't like that building process. I would rather just see them just cast your damn vote and be done with it. All right. This election season is dragging on too long as it is. Can I stop getting the phone calls? Can I stop? It's not even, it's the billboards. It's the yard signs. It's the phone calls, the TV ads, the radio ads, the nonstop, the internet ads. As I'm driving up, to take my son to a football game this morning, I'm following behind a car with, a current bumper sticker on it that is politically themed. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Even in traffic, staring at the ass end of another car, I can't get away from the campaign season. I'm tired of it. Just stop. All right, number 10 from Stan. Stan says, do you play any instruments or did you have music lessons as a kid? No, I don't play any musical instruments. No, I never had music lessons. I've always, always regretted that. Since becoming an adult, I've always wished I had had music as a kid. I think I would have enjoyed it. I could have been good at it. I would have hated practicing, which is, you know, why I didn't take up musical instruments as a kid, is because, well, I would have hated practicing. But yeah, no, I wish I had. Oh, man. But, oh well, water under the bridge. Am I right? All right, I've got to stop saying, am I right? I got that from Ross's Pegacorn. He has a bad influence. I got to quit using that phrase. I'm done with it as of now. No more. Number 66. That one's been used. Go again. Number 77. You're batting 0 for 2 here, pal. Number 95. This one's a good one. All right. This one is from Zimney. And Zimney. Zimney says, last furry thing you touched? ? Oh, Zim, your question could not be more poorly timed. It was my son's guinea pig that just died. Yeah. How do you feel now, huh? Yeah. Open up those wounds. Go ahead. Make a little boy cry. See if you're a big man now. God, what is wrong with you? Yeah, no, it turns out, we came home. Oh, this was, 2-3 days ago. All right. I was on the camp out last night with the Cub Scouts. And so my sense of time is completely off. 3 days ago, maybe we come home and guinea pig's eyes are a little bit crusty. We look it up. Oh, he's probably got a cold. Not a big deal. But then the next day, he's not only crusty, but he's also extremely lethargic. He's just not wanting to get up and do anything. I mean, pick him up, clean him up. You know, he starts kicking and fussing. And so, okay, he's not dead. That's good. But he's just not himself. And we're like, all right, well, it's after hours, but let's call. There's, you know, one of my other Cub Scouts. He's the kids in my son's class in the same Cub Scout group that I run, and his dad happens to be a veterinarian. Let's just call and ask his opinion and see if there's anything we can do right away. Turns out he is actually on duty at a clinic not 6 blocks from our house. He says, tell you what, it's not worth your time to bring a guinea pig in. We will charge you way too much for an office visit. But he says, if you just want to come down here, he said, from what you're describing, it's probably upper respiratory stuff. I can just give you some medicine, some shots that you can administer yourself. Take him home, you know, it'll be dirt cheap, and hopefully we can save your guinea pig. And so we rush out. It takes about 20, 30 minutes to get the medicine, get everything sorted out. We get back home, and by the time we get there, the guinea pig is already dead, and it was too late. So we had a little service. We buried him in the backyard. Ninja Dojo Jones, RIP, poor guy. Although the best part of that is as we visit the clinic to go pick up the medicine. I mean, it's like, all right, we know the guy's son. We know him. We've seen him at scouting events. We've talked to him a million times. Really nice guy. And as we're standing there waiting for him to get the medicine, he was working with another dog at the time. My son, 9 years old, has all sorts of questions. So have you ever worked on a guinea pig before? He's checking the dude's credentials before he'll let him give us medicine to help treat our guinea pig. And the guy's like, yes, I assure you, I've worked on. I just saw one this week, I promise. So, thank God He checked him out. Everything was kosher. Sadly, we were just a little too late. Number 10. Oh, man. All right. The duplicates are going to start coming hot and heavy here, aren't they? All right. Try again. 43. 43 is from Jeff Hawes. Jeff Hawes says, your top five desert island albums. Why, yes. I did watch High Fidelity again recently. All right, this is tough because the last time I did a top five desert island albums list was, you know, 15 years ago before I had iTunes to sort everything for me, and I don't even buy albums most of the time anymore. It's so rare. I mean, you know, back then it would have been Beck's Mellow Gold. It would have been Parliament Funkadelic. It would have been – I had – you know, a handful. At one point, you know, REM was on this list. But those wouldn't apply anymore. And now I don't have solid albums. I have, you know, I have mixes that I've made for myself, but even those are inconsistent. I don't have, all right, there'd have to be some White Stripes in there now, but I don't even know. I mean, would it be Elephant? Maybe. I don't know. I can't even pin it down. Because, like I say, I don't buy full albums most of the time. I just have songs I like. And to make a list of the songs I like, you know, enough to fill five albums, so what I have to pick up, 100 songs? I could go to my list now and read them off, I suppose, but, boy, that'd take a while. So, well, you guys have time, right? No, I'm kidding. I'm not really going to do that. It's a great question, but it's just not applicable to the way I do my music anymore. It would take me a lot more time to sort it out than I'm willing to spend for a podcast. Because, you know, I like to do as little research as possible. Number 80. All right, we got another good one. This one's from Serious Paul. And when I say good one, I mean good number. I haven't looked at the question yet. Serious Paul says, ever deliver a common peroneal knee strike. I assume I'm pronouncing peroneal correct. Perineal? Peroneal? I have no idea what that word is. And therefore the answer is no. No, I never have. But I'm sure you have, Paul, because that's just the kind of dude you are. And also, for what it's worth, in his line of work, I'm guessing Paul delivers pain on a regular basis when it's called for. That's just the way the world works. Number 97. Paul again. Paul says, which flavor of bubble gum is your favorite? Spearmint. I'm pretty basic on my gum. When I was a kid, it was grape. I loved that sour grape. It was awesome. But as I've gotten older, I just like a good spearmint gum. Typically, actually, with mints, my favorite mint is wintergreen. I love wintergreen lifesavers. That's awesome. But spearmint gum, or sometimes cinnamon gum, I suppose, although I get tired of that pretty quick. Yeah, I'm not a big gum chewer, but, you know, when I do, it'll be spearmint. Number 77. We just had that as a double again. Hold on. 84? Yes, Zimney Pot. Hey, Zim, what is the size of your shoes? Wait a minute. Didn't we just do this one? Hold on. It was Paul that asked me my shoe size earlier. Now it's see my two top users for submitting questions to the Pod-O-Matic have asked me the same question. I knew it was bound to happen. You guys have become the same person. Well, anyway, US size 12. Number 6, Rave Master. Rave Master says, what is your favorite toothpaste brand and flavor? All right, it's all about Mike trivia today. I think Crest. Crest standard, whatever their standard flavor of toothpaste is. The original, I don't know what it is. It's got the little red arrow at the back of it. But just plain old Crest. But it's toothpaste. I don't care. I'll use toothpaste. Whatever. Number 59, Serious Paul. Serious Paul says, what's your dump stat? Wisdom. I, Yeah, wisdom. That's pretty much I've gotten a little bit better as I've gotten older. I mean, because wisdom, in my experience, improves with experience. But for the most part, I got no common sense whatsoever. So clearly, when I was putting together Mike, I decided to take those extra points from wisdom and convert them to, I don't even know what, 1 point of charisma and some extra skill points. I don't know what I did with that stuff. So, but that would be my low stat, if that's what you're asking. 28, Sirius Paul. Xena is way cooler than Callisto, right? Yeah, cooler, yes. Absolutely cooler, more badass. I mean, hotter, no, not so much. I would much rather take Callisto to bed, but certainly cooler. Although, well, you know what? I'm not going to do a huge analysis of them. I mean, because they're intended to be opposite sides of the same coin, right? I mean, Xena's good, Callisto's evil. Callisto hates Xena and is seeking revenge on her, and is also obviously completely insane. And yet, they both have opportunities to off the other one. And neither one does it, right? Because Xena gets these chances where she could take Callisto out. She could put an end to this garbage once and for all, but some misguided sense of sympathy for the poor woman enters into it, and Xena lets her live. All right, Callisto, on the other hand, well, but if I kill Xena, I've run out of opportunities to inflict horrible pain on her. So, therefore, we'll just prolong her suffering and let her go. It's the same. It's a little back of. Am I reading too much into Xena? Is this too in depth on the Warrior Princess? Is that what I've done? You know what? We're gonna move on. Number 9 is a repeat. Number 16. Hey, it's Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, "How do you feel about black magic?" Well, I don't know, the same way I feel about any other magic. It's imaginary. But other than that, in the contexts where magic is important, fiction, games, this kind of stuff, oh, awesome, awesome stuff. Because black magic is interesting by virtue of being, you know, well, black. I mean, it's dark, it's typically evil, it's forbidden, often forbidden. That makes it even more interesting, right? This is good. Although, actually, I have in real life crossed paths with black magic, and it was when I was in college, and a girl that I knew who was a Wiccan, apparently, and I don't even know if this qualifies as black magic or not because I don't know all the rules, but she decided to use her magic powers for selfish ends, and apparently when you do that, whatever you reap come whatever you sow, yeah, whatever you sow comes back to you threefold. It's a karma thing, I guess, and so therefore for her to use this for selfish ends against me, apparently, but to use her magic for selfish ends would wind up then bringing back the karma threefold on her, but she thought it was worth it in this particular case. Apparently the gal, this Wiccan, had a crush on me, and she was going to bake me a pie containing a love potion spell, whatever it is. Again, I don't know how it works. And once I consumed this pie, I would then fall madly in love with her. Unfortunately for her, what she didn't know is that I don't like pie. I'm sorry. It's just, she was going to bake me an apple pie, and I'm like, yeah, no, fruit pie is not my thing. Sorry, not interested. So, in this particular case, I was saved. Black magic was defeated by my special defense, dislike of pie. Yeah, beat that. Fortunately for my wife, my then girlfriend, she was aware that I have a secret longing for chocolate chip cookies. That worked to her advantage. Number 58 is from Zimnipot. Zim says, "What is your favorite cheese?" Oh, God, I can't believe I've forgotten the name of it. It's, Red Leicester. Well, I'm afraid we're fresh out of Red Leicester, sir. Oh, never mind. How are you on Tilsit? Ooh, never at the end of the week. Get it fresh on Monday. Oh, tish tosh. No matter. Stout Yeoman, 4 ounces of Kerfili, if you please. Etc., etc. Red Leicester. I love Red Leicester. I went through my big cheese kick, for those of you who followed it earlier in the podcast, and I can't speak highly enough about this stuff. It is red, as per the name, a bit crumbly, and it is a tangier kind of, reminds me of Parmesan a little bit. Anyway, Red Leicester's my favorite. I also, from the same, Five Counties, grouping of cheese, I also really like the Double Gloucester. But I just love cheese in general, any cheese. But if you're going to send me gifts of cheeses, yeah, some good Red Leicester is always a winner. Number 19 from Dire Cat. What is your favorite emoticon? It is from my own website, my forums. It is the sarcasm hand. I love the sarcasm hand. I don't use it very often, and yet I like it. Somewhere, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, we started the raising your sarcasm hand when you're being sarcastic and someone appears to not get it. Or they get upset about something and you're just like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. From now on, I'll just raise this hand here to let you know when I'm being sarcastic. Will that help? And that became known as the sarcasm hand. And if you do that often enough, eventually you'll get people who go, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't have your sarcasm hand raised. Or the joke continues as, oh, is that with your sarcasm hand up, etc. And so when I asked for suggestions for emoticons to be put onto the website, my wife suggested that we make a sarcasm hand because there is no good sarcasm emoticon out there. There's some that are labeled sarcasm, but it's really hard to tell just from the little facial expressions that's what they're doing is being sarcastic. And so there's never been one that anyone has, at least anyone that I play with on the internet, has really liked to indicate sarcasm. So my wife suggested, well, why not make the hand? So, okay. So I did a big yellow glove with an S in the middle of it, and that was our sarcasm hand. Doesn't get the kind of use I would like, but it's still a lot of fun. Absolutely my favorite. Number 25. From Stan again. Ninja or samurai? Dude, I just told you guys that Ninja died. Yeah, strangely, samurai is the guinea pig that lived. How do you, God, why do you have to keep rubbing my nose in this one? All right. God, we couldn't do anything to save him. All right. We tried. Poor guinea pig. Number 14. Ooh, dude. All right. Never mind. Hold up. Number 90 is also a duplicate. Hold on. 22. One more time. 52. Oh, all right. Look, I'm taking this as the end of the podcast. Then, as soon as we get a good number, we're done. Give me another one. Go. 21. No good. 12. Ooh, 12 is a good one. All right, this will be our last one. This one is from Zimney again. And Zim says, oh, God, that's a long one, too. Okay. Go out with a bang, I suppose. On a late August evening, just before sunset, you walk into the kitchen to grab a glass of water, only to discover that me, Zimney, and three other non-U.S. listeners of your choice are all sitting at your dining table waiting for you to run a game for us. Being the kind of man that you are, you can't help but sit down and run something for us. After all, we've all traveled quite far to meet you. We ask you to run something with pirates, zombies, robots, and dinosaurs. Please describe what this game would be like. You son of a bitch. All right, I can do this. Hold on. Okay, first off, you know what? It doesn't really matter who the listeners are sitting around the table, because at this point, I don't even know necessarily who all my non-U.S. listeners are. I mean, obviously, look, it's you, and Crazy Elf would have to be there, and probably Flip, since Flip is listening again. But there's one more, and whoever you are, you're going to have to speak up and let me know, and I'll make sure that you're sitting at the table when this happens, because either I don't know you or I've forgotten you, in which case I apologize. But, you know, I'm under pressure here. All right. Now, you're going to think that my urge here is to go pull out my instant game tables, because this sounds like an instant game situation, that we should take our givens, which are, hold on, let me reference, pirates, zombies, robots, and dinosaurs. And with that, we should take the instant game tables and just start rolling up a setting, a time period, some extra Gonzo stuff to throw in there. By the way, Gonzo is going to be the key word here. You know what? I'm not going to do that. I am not going to make an instant game out of this, because we've already got so many bizarre elements. I almost said elephants, which would fit in nicely. We've got so many bizarre elements to throw in. I don't think adding dice rolls to that is going to help us. So we're going to go with this Gonzo over the top mishmash that we've got here. All right, and we are going to be pirates. All right, we've got a pirate setting. So therefore, I'm putting it a pirate ship in space. A pirate ship in space. Space pirates is what we are. And because of our zombie infection aboard ship, we have now had to make an emergency landing, some sort of crash that we have no control over. And we are on a populated planet, possibly sparsely populated at this point, but we are pirates facing a zombie infection, or maybe even better yet, we don't even know that that's why we crashed. All right. Maybe the zombie infection's already there on the planet. Maybe we brought it with us aboard the ship. We're not sure. All we know is something bizarre has happened that has forced us to crash on this planet. This is a colonized planet. There's going to be cities. There's going to be genetically engineered dinosaurs that are being used for labor there. There's going to be robots, huge mecha robots if we need them, probably driven by zombies eventually. All right. But because you said the word zombies, so here we are, and maybe this isn't such a Gonzo over-the-top setting, although I'm thinking it is. We can play it either way. It doesn't matter. All right, but now we're here. All right, we are a band of pirates, crash-landed, or landed in some way that we can't get back up. We're not getting the ship off the ground, so we are stuck here on the planet, a planet full of human colonists, so that we have plenty of fodder for our zombie invasion. Plus, of course, the robots, the dinosaurs, and any other bizarre thing you feel like throwing in at this point is going to be wide open, because the game we're playing is zombie cinema. Aha! You know why? Because I don't have to do any preparation whatsoever. All right, you gave me those four elements. I came up with a world in 5 minutes, and now we play zombie cinema where you guys do all the rest of the work with me. All right? And have I talked about zombie cinema with you guys before? Have I? Because if not, you'll love it. Zombie cinema is a collaborative storytelling game. You come up with a base setting, which normally would be the kind of setting you would see in a typical zombie movie. A mall, a school, a small town, you know, isolated location. You come up with a setting, and then everyone makes characters that are appropriate to that setting, based on these little cards that you deal out, and everyone comes up with a base stereotyped zombie movie sort of character, and then you guys go, and you take turns telling the story, and eventually the zombies as a force become an additional player within the game, and when there's conflict, dice come out, and either the zombies move up the track and the infection gets more severe, or you move up the track closer to your escape from this horror setting, whatever it is. It is brilliant. It is simple. It is easy. And while this is way outside the normal zombie genre, the zombie movies that zombie cinema is geared for, I think this would play excellently off of zombie cinema. I think these tools would work perfectly for it. And like I say, I've got the set right there. It's in my game box. It's right there by the dining table. We don't even have to go far. I would invite you in. I'd make a quick run for some snacks and some adult beverages, assuming that you're all of age. I have no idea. And then, dude, we would be sitting down playing within 10 minutes. All right, well, it would actually take any gaming session needs 10 to 15 minutes for dick jokes, and this one would take an extra half hour for, oh, my God, what are you guys doing at my house? This is amazing, all right? But then, great game, and we could probably have the thing run in like 3 hours, and it would be awesome.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. This week's theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write us a nice review or leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. If you want to contact me, you could always try emailing me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, but we all know how worthless that would be. To be totally honest, the best way to talk to me is come sign up for our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up, send me a message. We'll hang out. We'll have fun. Number two. This one is from Zimnipod again. And Zimny says, someone has just finished writing a Nerd Pride Radio fanfic and is threatening to publish it on the internet. How would you try to stop this crime against humanity? All right. First off, by fanfic, let's assume that you mean some absolutely inappropriate, sexually charged slash fic kind of fanfic for Nerd Pride Radio. I just assume that that's what you mean, because that's the kind of person you are, Zim. You can't deny it. And my response would be, I would invite them onto the podcast to read it themselves, and then I would include it at the end, just like this one, as a little bonus segment, because I ain't proud. Dude, that's funny. I mean, I'd probably have to bleep out a lot of it, which would make it even funnier. Did you ever watch Daniel Tosh when he gave the summary of the movie Human Centipede, and the whole thing was nothing but one big long censor bar? I mean, they bleeped out everything because there's nothing you can describe. I assume this would be the exact same sort of thing, and it would be glorious, and it would have you listeners out there, all seven of you, begging for details that I would never reveal because, well, I'm just not that kind of sight. And that would make it even funnier to me.